When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjoe Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjoe Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is demand management, justifying the ROI. Our guests for today's show are Ashwin Rangan, who is the former CIO for Walmart. Good morning, Ashwin.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Great. And then we have Tim Payne, who is the research director with Gartner. How are you, Tim?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Great. And we have Simon Ellis, who is the practice director for supply chain strategies with IDC. Hi, Simon.
Good morning.
Great. And then we also have Dr. Larry Lapidi, who's the research director for Demand Management Solutions Group and also the director of demand management at the MIT Center for Transportation and Logistics. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing very fine.
Great. So to start with, we all see that demand management is looked at different entities or different constituents in a different way. Starting with Ashwin, what do you think is true definition of demand management, or is there truly a true definition of demand management?
Good morning. Thank you again for having me on the show. I really think of this as demand shaping rather than demand management. I think demand is independent by definition, and managing something that is independent is hard at best, if not impossible. So what you can do is to shape the demand by appropriately stimulating the marketplace where you're expecting the demand to come from. And through that shaping mechanism, you can anticipate a particular demand based on the characteristics of the product or service that you're trying to offer to that target marketplace.
Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that from a definitional perspective. But with terms like these, it means many things to different people. We have the same issue around the supply chain management in terms of what that means to people. I think there are a lot of things within demand management you could really say is just the evolution of supply chain management. Where we focused on supply chain in the past, we focused on the supply side, probably to the detriment of the demand side. What we're saying really with demand management is, you've got to look at both sides, and it's about matching those two things up. It's about getting alignment between supply and demand over different sort of time periods. So you might be looking at it in a very short term, as you're going through execution, or you might be looking at it on a longer term when you're looking at capabilities or capacities that you might need to put in place. So it's really about that sort of optimization and matching between the two, and that can come from looking at your supply side, understanding what configuration you need to have in the supply chain that can cope with a certain level of demand or demand variability. I mean, the other thing around demand is that it's not just a level of demand that you're going to see for the product within the market. It's also around that volatility and that variability of the demand. So the shaping of that's important, but also there is the how do I cope with that? How do I manage the response that I'm going to bring from the supply side to that level of demand and that variability of demand that I'm going to see in the market for that particular product. So it's really about bringing those sort of both those sides, the demand and the supply side, together and getting an optimized answer, if you like, in terms of how you're going to manage that in the organization.
Simon?
I would concur with Tim's thoughts and with Ashwin's thoughts. I do think that demand management or demand shaping or demand influencing, can vary by industry. I mean, we've got sort of a bit of a CPG focus here this morning with Ashwin as the former CIO of Walmart, and so demand management in consumer packaged goods, may be sort of a different animal than it would be, for example, in high tech or in automotive or in sort of an asset oriented value chain business like metals or like chemicals. I do definitely agree with this sort of challenge. As you look at the supply chain, you have the supply side, you have the demand side. Sort of traditional cadences of those two sides of the supply chain. supply chain, you know, really have operated at different clock speeds. When you talk about sort of, you know, global sourcing, you can have in some industries, you know, 180-day lead times, whereas you might have sort of 72 or even 48-hour delivery times on the demand side. So, you know, kind of reconciling those different clock speeds, reconciling that cadence difference between the supply and the demand side, I think has a lot to do with, you know, where the focus of demand management is and should be, and frankly, you know, will allow businesses to extract the kind of value that they need, you know, for these kinds of programs to make sense.
Larry, what do you think?
Well, if this wasn't a question, I would say all of the above and a little more. So let me describe what I mean by this. About 3 years ago, I started focusing in particular on demand management. That is the primary research that I do in general, and I've been researching what companies do in this regard. But the first thing we had to do was define what is demand management. And here's why it's confusing right now. When people hear demand management in the marketplace, they either think it's forecasting, demand forecasting, or they think it's demand planning. And the first thing we need to talk about is what it isn't. And it isn't just about forecasting. In other words, so let me describe when I describe those terms, what we're looking at from a demand management perspective, what those terms mean. First of all, demand planning is the stuff done by marketing and sales. This is the stuff that Tim and the rest talked about in terms of demand shaping. It's the responsibility of marketing and sales to basically create and shape demand. And so essentially, that's the demand planning efforts, right? The forecast is merely a quantification of what those demand plans mean in terms of the business that a company is going to get over in the future based upon these demand shaping and creation plans that we're going to execute. And so forecasting's job is really to quantify what those means from a demand perspective. Demand management's a little bit bigger in the sense of it's actually it's, as it says, managing for demand, and therefore what it's about is really preparing for demand in terms of getting supply in shape, but then acting on demand when it comes in. So when I talk about demand management, it's the definition is anytime you're doing matching of supply and demand, and there are actually three processes, what I call three bridging processes inside of companies. The first one is sales and operations planning, which is a process that takes a look at weekly, monthly plans out in the future and matches up demand plans with supply plans, right? The second is what I call customer segmentation, where we're trying to figure out the products and services to offer the different customer segments that we're trying to attract. And that's again, matching supply and demand, but much more in the long term. And then in the short term, it's real term in terms of real time. In terms of when an order comes in, what supply do I match it up with, either current supply or future supply? So when I talk about demand management, I think it includes all of the above in the sense that it's any time supply and demand have to be matched, and that's either in real time or during the planning processes.
Well, with that being said, are we not playing a reactive role by which we are waiting for the demand to happen and then try to manage it? So what would be a proactive flavor of demand management? Tim?
It's a very good question. I mean, you know, as the others have said, that sort of being reacting to demand is a key part of it. But planning for capabilities, given the level of demand that you expect, you know, within the boundaries of you know, the variability that you expect to see on the demand is also important. And we'll probably get onto this perhaps with some of the other discussions further on, but one of the key things here, I think, as well, is yes, you've got to be able to respond. So you've got to be set up so that you know everybody says, you know, as Larry was saying, forecasting is only one part of it. But you know, everybody knows that a forecast is never right; it's always wrong. It's just a case of how wrong that forecast is. So you've got to be able to respond to the unforeseen and the unpredicted in that short term. But you can do things medium and longer term to make yourself more capable of responding to what you know, what you think you know is going to happen, and what you know that you don't know, if you see what I mean. So you know there's a degree of variability or unknown in there, and you've also got to look at how you can respond to that. There was a company that, an American multinational company, that actually did an exercise where they looked at all of the products that they had in their portfolio. And being a multinational, they had a whole range of different products from slow-moving products right the way through to fast-moving consumer goods type volumes and profiles and sort of everything in between. What they started to understand was they'd had a lot of systems implementations and put a lot of processes in, so they had what they thought were good demand management processes and sales and operations planning and distribution planning and replenishment, inventory management. So they'd done a pretty good job themselves from the point of view of putting all these processes in. But what they hadn't done at that stage was to understand, and this is something that they sort of evolved to in terms of their understanding of how they could manage their supply chain and their demand chain better, was to say, well, actually, different products at different points in their life cycles, or different products and different customers, actually, when you look at products themselves and maybe the different markets and the different customer segments that you're selling those products to, have a range of different characteristics. And getting a better match for those characteristics with effectively a different supply chain out of a portfolio of supply chains, for example, helps you, if you do that matching process well or intelligently, you can actually manage your way or mitigate against the risks and the uncertainties of unknown demand fluctuations or high levels of volatility or variability on the demand side. And so that can help you in terms of understanding what your risk is and how you're going to mitigate against that in the medium to the longer term. And so that becomes part of the toolkit or part of the capabilities that an organization should look for in terms of, as we said earlier, the matching of supply and demand. Yes, in the short term, you now know what you've got coming in because you've seen the orders and you've seen the response from customers to the product or the promotion. But longer term, there are a lot more unknowns there, and you have to start thinking about what type of capabilities, resource positioning, strategies am I going to use that's going to help me to manage that. And that's where those sort of two sides really start to come together.
Ashwin, if Walmart is what Walmart is today, would it have been based on matching of supply and demand alone?
I think Walmart is at the far end of the supply chain where it is much more of a demand sensor than it is a supply sensor. So just by definition, based on where it is located in the value chain, Walmart is less interested in how the supply side reacts and much more interested in how the demand is being stimulated and how the demand side is reacting. So there is given its position in the value chain, its interest is really in helping its suppliers understand how rapidly or otherwise demand patterns are changing. To that end, it provides tools like Retail Link, for instance, that is made available to just about every supplier. In fact, every supplier that is engaged with the brand is encouraged to look at Retail Link, which is very granular in the kind of information made available to the suppliers. It goes down to the level of a store and provides visibility into what's flowing, at what rate is it flowing through, and it can be aggregated at various levels all the way up to and including US-wide. So you can go down to regions. Within regions, you can go down to zip codes. Within zip codes, you can go down to store clusters. Within that, you can go down to a specific store and look at what's happening where. And I think to the point that was previously made, this is about understanding how that demand is impacting the supply chain and the supply chain's ability to respond. I want to step back here and talk about an experience that I had prior to Walmart, where I managed the IT and supply chain for a semiconductor company, where, the supply chain is lengthy by definition because you just can't take a substratum of a wafer and suddenly get a chipset. It takes a long time, and it has a lot to do with a combination of capacity at various stages, technologies that are being deployed at those stages, customers that are being segmented, and the kind of regional games that need to be played in terms of customer segmentation. In this particular case, it was a global company with a lot of customers from the Asia-Pacific region and a lot of customers from Japan and Europe, in addition to customers from the U.S. So, our questions there were in terms of how do you become smarter in managing to the inherent variability in the demand? Because, as someone said, forecasts are one thing always, and that is wrong. They're never right because the actual demand is rarely, if ever, going to meet the forecast. So you'll have one of three things occur. You will either get a demand signal that's higher than the forecast, lower than the forecast, or in a location that is very different from where you thought that you would be getting a forecast signal. So the ability of the supply chain to quickly adapt and to configure itself and supply to that new demand signal, which is the true demand signal, is really the ability to manage to the demand.
Larry, what do you think about what Ashwin just mentioned? Is that truly, a proactive capturing of what the demand is and then making the supply match to it? So you should be more demand-heavy than caring about the supply because that can always play catch-up?
I don't agree 100% with it because somebody mentioned early on something called demand shaping. So let's go into what that means. And I think the classic case of demand shaping is what I call the old Dell, okay? Dell every day had a meeting where people would sit in a room and take a look at the inventory of components in the warehouse. And based upon what was in the warehouse, they would change what was being promoted on the web. And here's what they would do. If they found an electronic or computer accessory or component that they had a lot of, well, then they would go on the web and they would start to promote configurations with that component in it, trying to sell it, right? If they found a component that they were short of and they weren't going to get for quite a while, they would go on the web and what I call depromote it, and they would basically take it out of configurations that are being promoted and also extend the lead times on when people could get that product delivered to them. And it's what I call classic demand shaping, where what you do is as you look at supply and you match supply up better with demand in order for the benefit of both sides. And this is really what demand management is about, is this demand shaping to not sell anything you don't have, nor should you not have any supply that you're going to sell. It's really what I call chasing opportunities. If there's a sales opportunity, then it's incumbent upon the supply side of an organization to make sure we have supply for it. If we have a shortage of supply, then demand side, called sales and marketing, shouldn't be selling it as heavily. And I think Dell is the best case of this. They did it on a daily basis.
Simon, what do you think what Larry just mentioned and what Ashwin mentioned is a different set of flavors? What is actually working in the market?
So I think it depends a little bit on what segments you're talking about, right? I mean, so Larry's talking about sort of, generally kind of high-tech or engineered products. Ashwin, more for kind of, fast-moving consumer goods, kind of CPG products. I mean, I do think that there's this kind of iterative process that occurs between the supply side and the demand side, right? I mean, so there's, demand creation or demand promotion that happens on the front end, which is to sort of create the demand for the product, and then the supply chain, ends up being largely reactive to that demand based on the forecast. I mean, I agree with Ashwin's point. In my days at Unilever, we always used to say that the moment you publish a forecast, it's wrong because inevitably, as he points out, you're either high or low in a different place at a different time. I think the supply chain ends up being largely reactive to the demand creation, to the demand shaping, and the things that the supply chain can do. We've talked about things like postponement, things like reuse of components, so that there's less variability in the product. You can look at excess capacity, availability, flexibility. I mean, there's a lot of things the supply chain can do to respond to unexpected demand. But then you get the sort of the flip side where you have excess inventory, you have excess product. How do you create demand? The Dell example is a very good one in consumer packaged goods. I mean, you have promotional vehicles, and although promotions tend to be planned well in advance, there's always some ability to flex those promotional activities, extend them, drop a coupon, for example, that drives some demand from through the consumer. So it's a very much an iterative process between sort of the development and creation of demand and the fulfillment of demand, and the sort of the supply side and the demand side of the supply chain really do work in both, to make sure that you're really meeting your customer service objectives.
What would you do differently if the demand management was to be managed for a brand new product? You do not have any empirical data. It is a totally, maybe it's a new line of product that you're trying to come up with. Do you think demand management even applied to that? Simon, why
don't you start? Yeah, I mean, again, this is Simon. Yeah, I do. I mean, I think so. So, you know, if we're talking about consumer packaged goods companies, for example, you know, there is always some sort of historical precedent, right? I mean, there's always some ability in marketing and in sales to, you know, look at comparable products. I mean, you do focus groups. You get a sense of, you know, how appealing this product is going to be to the consumer, and you generate an expected sales plan, an expected demand plan, and you know, when you move back into the supply chain, you know, you make some assessments as to, you know, what kinds of capacity you need to build. I mean, in recent years, certainly, you know, contract manufacturing, third-party manufacturing has become a big part of how companies manage new products. I mean, my days at Unilever, you know, probably not a good idea to build large amounts of expensive capacity for a product that, you know, is new to your business, that you don't have a really good sense on perhaps what it's going to do in the marketplace. So, you know, that might be something that you use contract manufacturing, outsourced capacity, at least initially, to provide the product for. And again, it becomes an iterative process. I mean, marketing and sales, you know, do as well as they can in terms of trying to find what the marketplace is, what the share is going to be for the product. And then you sort of manage this iterative process to make sure, you know, that you have capacity available and that you're meeting your service needs. Because the old adage that you only have one chance to make a first impression is most certainly true with new products. If you introduce a new product and it's not available in the store, you know, that's not a good thing for consumer take-up. It's not good in the eyes of the consumer. And, you know, retailers like Walmart will not be happy with you.
Larry, what do you think the world should do when they are going to take a deal there? They're going to handle a new product.
Okay. First of all, just so you're clear, a new product is very much in demand management because it is demand shaping. What I'm trying to do is shape demand to sell, to buy my new products. That is very much a demand shaping event. So, and it has to be treated a little bit differently because we have this issue called product launch. During product launch, we've got to make sure that we understand and have enough supply available to meet product launch and also be able to capture the demand signals needed to change some of the view of what's going to happen with this new product, whether it's going to be successful or not. So it is very much in the preview of demand shaping because it's probably the most drastic case of demand shaping. We're trying to actually gather new customers to our business. Now, in terms of how you plan for this, normally what we do, at least in the forecasting side for the forecasters, is we take a look at some like products in the past that we've introduced, and we kind of see if this one's going to look a little bit like that. And we put together of what we think is going to sell over the launch of the product in terms of how these kinds of products sold in the past. And we might adjust it for whether this product is going to be more successful or not based upon, as Simon says, market research, et cetera. Then the very important thing is to make sure the supply is out there so we capture demand as it happens, but we also capture the success of the new product and then feed that back in so we're able to readjust supply. So it is a little bit different than the normal, what we call term business, regular business in a company, but essentially there are methods for doing the launch, and the launch includes not only making sure the supply is there, but also making sure we're capturing the demand signals back in terms of how well this is selling or not selling, so that we can take action to make it sell better or to decide to not sell it anymore, whatever the case may be, in the case of an unsuccessful product.
Ashwin, with respect to Walmart or your product experiences, whenever you encountered a new product or the supplier says this is a brand new product, how would the things trigger at your end and also the supplier end because demand management has to be a collaborative effort?
Absolutely. I'm going to use a very different example here. You know, GameStop is where kids pick up videos video games. And when new titles get introduced by a company like Electronic Arts, they actually make available the title 6 months before the title is physically available for distribution through GameStop. This is a classic case of forward sensing, where collateral that pertains to the game is made available, marketing for the game starts way ahead of time, and the critics start to weigh in so that the Metacritic score that's associated with that particular title becomes widely published and available to the gaming segment way before the title gets released. So much so that orders, physical orders, are being taken in advance by GameStop on behalf of EA months before the product gets released. So if you ask yourself, how is the supply chain reacting to this? First and foremost, you've got a skew that you can take orders against. Many companies don't even get to that stage 6 days before the launch, right? But here is something that's happening 6 months before the launch. So there is a lot of rigor, there is a lot of discipline in the supply chain to anticipate events on an ongoing basis, helping understand the demand pattern way ahead of time, so that when the launch physically occurs, the launch becomes much less of an event. In fact, the entire goal of a launch really becomes to make it into a non-event, so much so that the supply chain is already triggered and in a state of preparedness to supply to the particular demand signal that's coming in from the channel. In EA's case, GameStop is perhaps the single biggest channel they have after Walmart. So it's those kind of things that people can look at, where it is not just saying how reactive are we or how much capacity have we built up, but it's a very good combination of that ability to react all the way from having capacity, whether it's in-source or outsourced, all the way through to managing the supply chain ahead of its time insofar as new products gets introduced.
Tim, what have you seen done differently when a new product is being utilized versus an existing product line being used?
Well, I think a lot of the points have already been covered. I mean, for me, it's about recognizing with new products that you've probably got a lot more unknowns there. There's a lot more uncertainty. And so, as Ashwin said, there's strategies that you can take in terms of how you launch the product, how you might, where and how you might inventory for that product, what you might do on the manufacturing in terms of capacity, outsourcing. You know, there are a range of different strategies that you can look at. And really, I think the name of the game is to say, you've got more uncertainty there than you're likely to get on any of the other products, because it's new, because you don't know what the uptake is going to be like or how the market is going to react. And so it's recognizing that there is that higher degree of uncertainty, and then saying, well, so how am I going to cope with this? What strategies am I going to employ, or a combination of strategies am I going to employ that's going to help me to manage through that? So it could be around the timing of the launch. It could be phasing of the launch. You know, some people go for global launches, and those can be quite high risk because of the unknown levels of demand in different regions, or it might be something that you phase across regions, for example, until you get to a global launch. There can be things that you can do where maybe you actually pay a little bit more, or you spend a little bit more in the supply chain. You know, one of the things that companies often do is say, well, okay, I'm bringing in a new product. I'm going to push it through the same supply chain that I just pushed, you know, the product it's replacing through, or a product that's in the same product family. And that's set up maybe for a product that's, you know, coming towards the end of its life, or it's in the middle of its life cycle where the demand profile is more stable. And so, and that supply chain has also been optimized perhaps more for cost rather than for responsiveness to the market, which is obviously what you need when you're talking about, you know, new products. And as somebody else said, you know, you only get one chance to make a good impression. And so that's paramount with the new product going into the market. So it's a balance, and the balance means looking across that supply chain and understanding that, yeah, maybe, you know, if you have a little additional capacity or you're changing the machines, the manufacturing machines around more often in order to ensure that you've got that more responsiveness in the supply chain for the new product that's going through. Yes, there may be additional costs associated with that, but you're looking at the overall, or should be looking at the overall sort of profitability of the product through its life cycle. So it's hugely important that you meet the demand, you manage and shape and meet the demand for that product going into the market, and because, you know, you've got to get the volume in there, you've got to get the acceptance of the product and grow that. Once the product's launched, of course, you know, you're then into managing it through its life cycle and trying to, when it's moving through to the different phases. So that becomes, you know, that sort of whole life cycle management aspect becomes important. I think the other thing as well is that often, you know, companies are not launching new products in isolation. They're upgrades to existing products, or they're replacements for other products. So, you know, what is the impact of you launching this new product on other products in your product range? You know, we'll talk about, cannibalization of the demand on other products. And so, you know, it's not just a case of, you know, what's going to be the impact on the new product and the impact then on the supply side to support that, but also there may be other products in the portfolio that are affected as well, and therefore you have to look a little wider to understand that maybe, you know, if demand is going to transfer from the old product to the new product, or the old version to the new version, you know, what does that release for you in terms of resources or capabilities on the supply side? Are there issues that you need to look at in terms of, you know, are components common across those products or different? So, you know, there are additional complications that you have to take into account when it's a new product.
Let's take a quick break, listeners. We'll be right back after these messages and see why demand management surely looks like a great initiative that most companies should delve into. However, it's very complex, and before you really take that on, we got to do some sort of a readiness check that is this organization be able to, you know, sail through this initiative and be able to make it successful. So what does it take? Is everybody in synchronization, and finally, will they be successful? So what kind of readiness, what type of due diligence should be done before you take on such an initiative? Please stay tuned. We'll be right back and discuss.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. The experts are here. Voice America Business Network.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Avol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.avol, A-V-V-A-L, avol.com. Visit today.
Now, Mrs. Johnson, before we close on your mortgage loan, I want to make sure you remember Mike.
Hi, you can trust me. I'm African-American, just like you.
So, here's the low monthly payments and interest rates we promised, and here's where they triple.
The rest of this stuff is just here to make sure that we get your house when you can't pay us back.
What a lovely house.
Predatory lenders are never this easy to spot. Call us at 866-222-FAIR and protect yourself with the facts. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Fair Housing Alliance and the Ad Council.
There are so many challenges facing management today around the world. The New Management Network is here to provide practical insight and solutions for many of these challenges. Hosts Don and Bonnie Folk will explore topics designed to help you get the competitive upper hand, including organizational tools, personality and leadership, cutting-edge management tips, and much more. Join the New Management Network live every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Network.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. 972-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. So we want to do demand management. It looks great. It can create value, but is an organization ready for it? Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, this is the big question in terms of where an organization is in really its maturity, I think, in terms of getting to the stage of demand management. As I said when we were sort of talking before the break about the definition of demand management and sort of the evolution on from supply chain management, there are still a number of companies out there who honestly struggle with supply chain management in terms of just on the supply side getting a lot of their operations and their functions and their departments talking to each other and working together. You then throw in the demand side, if you like, and as we said before, that's with the sales and marketing organization in terms of creating and shaping that demand. And there's always been not always, but very often, a brick wall between the supply side and the sales and marketing side. And that's really where you've got to concentrate on sort of breaking that down. So that's a really big thing to do from an organizational perspective. And as Larry said earlier, he said, looking at the definition of demand management, and there are a number of pieces in there, sales and operations planning, from an organizational perspective in terms of bringing the sort of two sides of the equation together from a demand and a supply perspective. Now, what I've often seen is companies who, are going through some sort of a roadmap to getting towards demand management, starting out by putting in, demand planning and putting in the technology and the processes to create the forecast and then trying to link that through to the supply side. A stage on from that is really about then putting in a good, capable sales and operations planning process that really starts to address the organization. Well, there's some process stuff that you do there to bring the two sides together. It's about harmonization, really, of those two sides of the equation, the demand and the supply side, as we said, the alignment and the matching that needs to happen within demand management. But it's also starting to get that communication and that consensus building across the different organizational groups within the company, and just getting them to talk. Maybe, different language exists in the different groups, even the different ways in which they talk about maybe even the units of a demand plan or a forecast. And we have to get beyond that so that there is a good conversation and a consensus building across those different functions that are going to be involved from a demand management perspective. And a key part of that as well is performance management. So anybody that's been through an S&OP implementation will know that you've got metrics in there that look at the underlying health of the processes, etc. And it's a cliche to say it, but you get what you measure. If you put the right measures in there, you can start to incentivize the right type of behavior, which is about getting the two sides to talk to each other. It's about managing to the agreed plans and tolerances that have been discussed and approved and signed off in the S&OP process. So there's some really big things that need to be done there from a process perspective, obviously, but really from an organizational perspective as well.
So Larry, when do you see the organizations trying to take on or even contemplating taking on demand management? What's your advice?
I agree with Tim 100%. Here's the biggest issue in demand management. Demand management, again, simply put, is matching supply and demand. That sounds very simple. The issue is the people controlling and shaping demand are different than the people shaping and controlling supply. So in order to really make this happen, you have to have at least two kinds of what I call collaboration going on. One is internal collaboration. And the internal collaboration really deals with getting the marketing and sales, financial people, and the logistics and procurement people all aligned to match supply and demand with common goals. Well, the first issue you have is you have to establish a process to do this, and sales and operations planning obviously is the most prevalent one we see right now, in terms of trying to get that kind of process going. Well, that kind of process is cross-functional in nature. And because of it, there are some issues in making sure that the process does what is intended to do. The first issue has to do with these different people. Their personalities are different. They generally don't like to meet, and they don't like to talk to each other, to be frank. Sales and marketing people are different than logistics and manufacturing people, and that's okay because it's consistent with the kinds of jobs they've got to do. But when they get together in meetings, they do talk different languages sometimes. And so that's the first issue, is you've got to create what I call these bridging processes where you can get these cross-functional groups to come together and think about matching supply and demand. The second issue is they're goaled differently. The demand side of the house, sales and marketing, is really goaled on maximizing revenues, while the supply chain side or supply side is typically goaled on reducing inventories and reducing costs. And so the real big issue is, what is the goal of the bridging process? The goal of the bridging process is profitability, top side and bottom side. So that's what you've got to put in place, and that's a struggle because the goals are differently in the organizations, and so they've got to, at least in these bridging demand management processes, think of the profitability goal rather than just the maximizing of revenues or minimizing the cost in inventories. And that's really what demand shaping is about, is to create a demand shaping process where you can shape demand to achieve the best profitability we can. So that's on the inside. The outside obviously has its own issues, which is collaboration with customers. And so, as was mentioned before, Walmart's Retail Link is really an attempt to collaborate with their suppliers. And a supplier can look at it as Walmart as a customer and say, hey, I'm going to share information with you so you can figure out how best to match supply and demand down at the shelf. Okay? So that's a collaboration story. It's not prevalent in industry, but it is something that can be done. So that's collaboration between a customer and a supplier on the customer side. But also on the supply side, when you're using outsourced contract manufacturers, it's important to have information on what their constraints and limitations are so that we don't go selling things that we can't make. And so there's a whole set of collaboration that needs to be done with the supplier side as well. So I think the issue is demand management's a pretty big story, but it is really where value is created. And collaboration, both internally and externally, are critically important in making sure that demand shaping takes place to achieve profitability goals, which is the goals of that you want to achieve. You don't want to sell stuff that you don't make money on, and that kind of thing. Okay.
So, Simon, are people jumping the gun in your view, or are they for the most part playing very cautiously in this space?
I agree with everything that Tim and Larry have said, or almost everything. But I would, let me offer a slightly different perspective. I tend to come from the position that if you say that demand management is, fundamentally about demand generation and then demand fulfillment, then by definition every company is doing some form of demand management, right? I think where the kind of the rubber hits the road is, how effectively are those two parts of the business interacting? How effectively are they collaborating? If I'm a supplier of a particular product, and I have very poor visibility into the demand signal, I can still manage acceptable service levels by either having lots of extra inventory or lots of extra capacity. But that's not going to be cost competitive, so I'm going to find at the end of the day that I can't sustain that position because my cost structure will be out of whack versus my competitors, and I'll be more susceptible to pricing pressures. So I do think at the end of the day, if you think of demand management kind of along a continuum that starts sort of with the basics of demand generation and demand fulfillment, and then moves sort of along to include collaboration, both upstream and downstream. I agree completely with Larry on those points, to include kind of an effective S&OP process, to include the postponement and reuse concepts that we've talked about. Then you become competitive against your critical metrics. If you look at most companies, they will have sort of key cost and key service metrics at the board level. you know, key profitability metrics. You know, those are the ones that at the end of the day the business is most focused on. So from a demand management perspective, I think the sophistication varies a lot by company. And I think that, you know, the ability to collaborate across the demand and supply sides of the supply chain, the ability to drive cost out, improve service levels, you know, is at the end of the day the fundamental goal of demand management. Because as I said at the outset, I mean, all companies do it in some form or another, but those companies that do it more effectively and do it more efficiently with higher levels of collaboration are gonna find themselves either with better service levels or a better cost structure or both.
Larry, when we look at all the discussion that we had so far, a lot of big words were used, a lot of things were used where we were saying, okay, we can get this done. But it's easier said than done. What does it take?
Here's the issue. Everybody, when they say you have to do something big, the company says it has to come from the CEO, and they say that about almost every single thing that gets done. On this initiative, it really is true. Not the CEO, but the COO. It has to come from the top. In other words, because people are goaled differently on different levels. You know, finance has certain goals that they're trying to achieve. Logistics and transportation and warehousing are trying to achieve certain goals that they're trying to achieve, as well as manufacturing. Marketing and sales is trying to achieve certain goals that they have. They really need to get together and do what I call joint decision making, and it's important that they do joint decision making. In other words, not one side making a decision over the other, but basically coming together and figuring out what really is what is best from the enterprise point of view. So this has to be something that has to start, and usually starts, as someone mentioned, with the sales and operations planning process inside of the company. But it has to have executive, not participation necessarily, but it's executive support, that everybody understands that these things you have to do, this is part of your job. This is how we're going to get to achieve our strategic goals in the organization, by getting all the constituents involved in terms of who controls supply and demand and manages it together in a room, and make sure we're all consistently trying to achieve our strategic corporate goals, as opposed to achieving these goals that I gave you down at your level, which might be just maximizing revenues or minimizing inventories or something like that, that when you're in these bridging processes, these are important processes, because this is we're actually starting to call this the integrated business planning process, the S&OP process, because it's probably one of the only meetings that takes place where you've got multi-functions getting together trying to figure out supply and demand. So it's very much has to start. I know it's a cliche to say start from the top, but this one really has to, because it involves a cross-functional process that has to be done very diligently.
What are the pitfalls and what are some of the chronic issues that we would be facing when we are trying to take on such a demand management initiative? Tim?
I think the from a major issue pitfall perspective, one of the big ones for me still comes back to the organization, and really just getting people to behave differently, which comes down to, you know, the organizational model and the metrics, etc. And again, I would agree completely with Larry in terms of, you know, this has to be driven, you know, from the top. You know, we say that when we talk of things like S&OP. We said that's an important bridging process, as Larry puts it, you know, in terms of layering over the functional and operational processes to sort of get this collaboration and this consensus stuff working. And we know from experience that, you know, where companies go in and they implement S&OP, if it comes out of the supply chain group or it comes out of manufacturing or logistics, which is often the area that sort of generates the requirement or the need, because, you know, they just don't know which plan or which forecast that they're working to, because there are so many in existence within the organization often. So they just want a process that, you know, helps them to get to, you know, to one plan to work from. And we know from where those come out of the supply chain group, they're sponsored by the VP of supply chain or that type of a position, that they become just an adjunct to the operational processes. They're an add-on. They're not really seen as that overall consensus cross-functional process. And they stutter, and in many cases, they die away and get subsumed back into, you know, some functional departmental process and don't deliver on the capability that they need to support this wider demand management type of process that we've been talking about. So it has to come from the very top. And again, ultimately, we're talking about matching demand and supply. So if you map those back up through the organization, you know, who does that rest with at the end of the day, who's got ultimate responsibility for the demand side and the supply side? Well, it's not marketing, it's not manufacturing, it's not logistics, it's up at the CEO level. So the guy at the top or the lady at the top has got to take that sponsorship role seriously to generate the behavior changes, to generate the strategy and the vision that's required in order to even get onto the roadmap of moving these things forward. Of course, then underneath that, there are issues and capability gaps that will need to be addressed from the point of view of processes and technology to support all the things that we've been talking about.
Simon, we can always look at what people should do, what should they not do, what mistakes should they not commit when they are starting out or are they in the middle of such an initiative?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think you know, the one thing, and it was mentioned before, I think companies perhaps think of it too much as blocking and tackling, but this notion of performance management, right? I mean, this notion of, you know, making sure that you really do have, you know, the right organizational incentives in place. I mean, it wasn't not too long ago in my career that you know, I was having a conversation with a supply chain executive who said, look, you know, I've got an inventory target, I've got a manufacturing capacity available, and I've got a service level target. And when I look at all three, they're mutually exclusive. They're irreconcilable. I can't achieve my service levels based on this capacity and this inventory. So, you know, really make sure that, you know, that you've got sensible goals and that the metrics are aligned. You know, one of my other experiences was that, you know, if you look at the board level KPIs and then you look at how those KPIs trickle down to, for example, logistics and distribution, a company had, you know, all of their logistics and distribution metrics were in the green, right? They were all producing well against their goals, yet the top line service level was red. The top line service level was poor. So, you know, how do you reconcile and do you have the right hierarchy, the right linkage between all of your KPIs, and are you in fact doing the things that you should be doing, the critical things that you should be doing to achieve either your profitability or your service level targets? So, you know, I do think it's important to focus on, you know, it's a bit of an old saw, I suppose, but I do think it's important to focus on the right things. And I also think it's important, and we've not really touched on it this morning, I do think it's important to be clear about the quality of your data as well. You know, one of the things that we see an awful lot of is, you know, companies making decisions on poor data, and they get poor results, and they can't understand why in an effective S&OP process I'm not getting the kinds of business performance I expect, because what they find is that they're operating their business on bad data. They're making decisions on incomplete or in many cases wrong information. So, you know, I think it's important to make sure that you, from a performance management perspective, that you have the right metrics in place. And I think it's important to make sure that you're focusing on a few key things. You know, where I see supply chain initiatives or demand management initiatives fail is, you know, the old adage of, you know, trying to boil the ocean, right? Make sure you focus on the key things for your business, and you don't get distracted by the noise in the marketplace. If it's downstream collaboration with your retailers and understanding consumer demand through data points like point of sale, if, you know, if that's the key focus for your demand management initiative, you know, make that your focus. If it's upstream through the supply network, managing suppliers better, having a more collaborative relationship with key suppliers, if, you know, if that's going to drive the value for your business, you know, make sure that's where your key focus is.
All right, we have 1 minute. Very last question. Who should be responsible for such a pervasive, impacting initiative? Tim?
Well, the buck stops at the top for this. It has to, for all the reasons that we've said in the past. And that's where the sponsorship has to come from in order for this to be truly effective. So the guy or the lady at the top has really got to set out the agenda, you know, have the active sponsorship of the demand management initiative. Obviously, that will break down into sub teams, projects, initiatives, and that's where the the different departments will come in and the resources assigned to those. But with any good project, it's a big initiative anyway because of the way it spans the supply chain. You know, there should be a good steering team format and structure in place to make sure that, the issues that are going to come up and the conflicts that are going to come up are being resolved within the framework of, you know, where is it we're really starting to get to. I think a really good analogy with this is that, and we see this in, companies that are on some form of a program or initiative as far as supply chain is concerned, and you're putting pieces in, but what you're doing is you're putting in pieces of the jigsaw. Somebody's got to have the picture on the box. You know, what is this going to look like when it's finished? So that you are, when you're designing processes, you're designing performance management systems, KPIs, technology, integration, collaboration, you know that you're going to be fitting some of these pieces together, and it might not happen now. It might be something that, you know, you bring the pieces in line and you connect those, you know, at some point, you know, further down in the future as the program rolls forward. So somebody's got to be high enough above that to really be able to see that picture on the box and make sure those pieces are going to fit together.
Simon, who would get the pat on the back or neck will be grabbed in the things in case the things go south?
Yeah. So I think as with all sort of general questions, it's dangerous to give a general answer. I mean, but let me do that anyhow. So we tend to see kind of the chief operating officer as sort of as kind of the buck stops here person in the organization. That's generally where I think sort of the operational side and the marketing and sales side sort of interacts at the most senior level. So the COO becomes ultimately the man or woman who has final responsibility. But I think it's also I understand and I agree with the notion of an organization, a senior organizational champion, and start developing these initiatives from the top. But I also think you've got to make sure that you have full organizational engagements, and you've got to have clarity of roles, people understanding what their part is in the whole initiative. So where companies fail is sometimes the failure is that you don't have that sort of top level executive sponsorship. Other times, they're not walking the talk, right? I mean, it's we used to talk in my days at Unilever of moving from posters to practice, right? So it's fine to put stuff up on a poster on the wall, but at the end of the day, you have to turn it into actual behavior. You have to turn it into practical business processes, and you have to practice it. So I think, the COO takes ultimate executive responsibility, but you got to make sure that the full breadth and depth of the business is kind of rowing in the same direction in terms of doing the things that they need to do for their groups or their departments. Will ultimately get you the top line and bottom line business goals you aspire to.
Larry, just 15 seconds. Need your expert comments. Who's next to grab?
Who's neck to grab? Again, it depends on who took the neck. So again, back to sponsorship, I agree with everything was said there in terms of it's the COO, CEO, might be the chief financial officer, somebody who has to be the sponsor, who cares about corporate goals. But then in the final analysis, the senior managers and middle managers have to be doing the work. And so you need to assign a project manager on some of these initiatives who is kind of neutral, who does look at the corporate goal. Often this is somebody out of finance, supply chain, somebody who has a more corporate level view rather than a functional view. But very critical is to make sure that these teams are cross-functional teams and all functions are participating in and actively engaged in it. And you need to staff it with people from each of those organizations. So in the final analysis, when it's not working, then there's somebody who is not participating, somebody who's not being a team member to get these projects working, and that's whose neck ultimately you should grab and fix. so that the team acts as a cross-functional team looking on behalf of the total corporation rather than their own functional area.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I'd really like to thank you, Ashwin, Tim, Simon, and Larry, for sharing your thoughts on the demand management and how we can make that successful.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So demand management is a complex change management issue, as we already saw. So truly, we cannot manage demand. We can just shape in and make ourselves ready for scaling and extending our organizations in order to meet those changes. What does it take to make a demand management initiative successful? Ideally, all players in the value chain should be on board and ready to invest, collaborate, and contribute towards the success. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog All, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Gall next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.